but he had gone to school to repair air conditioning systems and had been working at his trade for 18 years. Both seemed to be very stable. There were two other Martine children, a 7-year-old girl and a 4-year-old boy. They attended the local Catholic church. You couldn't get much cleaner than Rachel and Ronald Martine. Range Minoso showed up on the Virginia business report, described as bail enforcement and fugitive apprehension. The business had leased office space in Arlington. The proprietor was Rixislo Ixnelos Zuvemo. In 6 months of operation, it had incurred a long list of delinquent bills.
I love the way he's coded his name every time it pops up in a database, Lula said. It's genius.
This doesn't sound right, Connie said. Ranger runs a tight business. He pays his bills on time.
I saw a TV show on identity theft, Lula said. Maybe someone's posing as Ranger.
I'd actually been thinking the same thing for some time. And the fact that Ranger's name is always in code probably helped to hide the theft. I dialed Tank. I'd sworn I'd never again dial Tank, but I couldn't help myself. I didn't know what else to do. They just found Carmen Minoso dead in her SUV in front of the bonds office, I told him. If Ranger's looking for his body double, there's a good chance he's here in Trenton.
10-4.
And Tank hung up.
So you don't think Ranger offed Carmen? Lula asked.
Ranger wouldn't have left her in front of the bonds office for us to find. Ranger would have made her disappear, never to be found again. Ranger likes to keep things tidy. Morelli stuck his head in the office and crooked his finger at me.
Can I see you outside?
I left the bonds office and we stood by the side of the building.
Her driver's license identifies her as Carmen Minoso, Morelli said. She seems to be the woman you described to me. I didn't think you'd want to see for yourself. She's been dead a while. It's not good. A single bullet in the head.
Could it have been self-inflicted?
No. Her gun was unfired on the driver's side floor.
I have a theory.
Oh, boy.
I gave Morelli a copy of the Virginia business report. I think some nut is posing as Ranger.
Identity theft.
Yeah, only maybe it's not that simple. Maybe this guy is whacked out. He got married as Ranger. That's carrying identity theft a little far.
You still haven't heard from Ranger?
No, I've talked to Tank a couple times, but that's like talking to a wall.
What about the kid? Any more theories?
I think one of the Rangers took her.
And?
And I think it's the wrong one. The little girl's parents look solid, and Ranger's been regularly sending child support. I don't think he'd take the girl without telling her mom. A while ago, Ranger mentioned that he had a daughter, but I got the impression it wasn't common knowledge. So either it's someone who was at one time very close to Ranger, or else it's someone close to the little girl or her family.
And I want to know this because...
Because you want to close Carmen's case, and it's possible she was shot by the un-Ranger.
Something I've learned with police work,
Morelli said.
It's good to have theories, but don't lock yourself into them. In the end, it's facts that count, not theories. Carmen could have been killed by some random maniac, and Ranger could easily be leading his own double life. No one knows what's in Ranger's head. There are too many times a crime doesn't get solved because the investigator followed an obvious but wrong lead and ignored looking for anything else until it was too late and all other leads were cold.
Point taken, I said.
Well?
Lula asked when I returned to the office. A single bullet to the head, I told her, not self-inflicted.
Right in front of the office, Lula said. Gives me the creeps.
I'm feeling stressed, Connie said. This has been a really shitty morning.
I bet I got something that'll cheer you up, Lula said. This here specialty shop I know about was open this morning, and I stopped on my way to the office. I got another singing gig tonight, and I needed a new outfit. Everybody wait here, and I'll try it on.
5 minutes later, Lula swung out of the bathroom and paraded around the bonds office in a one-piece jumpsuit-type thing made out of glaring white vinyl. The bottom was short shorts that sort of got lost in Lula's ass, and the top was strapless, squishing her boobs up so they bulged out everywhere. The outfit was accessorized with 4-inch spike-heeled white vinyl boots that came to just below her knee.
Now when someone hits me with an onion ring and it leaves a grease spot, I can just wipe it off with Lysol, Lula said.
Smart, I said to Lula. Are you sure you want to do this?
Fucking A. I'm expanding my horizons, remember? This could be a whole new career for me. Not that I don't like bounty huntering, but I feel this is a time when I should be open to new opportunities. Anyway, the what's got a job lined up at the Golden Time Senior Center in Mercerville tonight.
Connie and I were speechless. Lula was going to perform in a white vinyl band-aid in front of a bunch of impaired senior citizens.
I know what you're probably thinking, Lula said. You're thinking I probably don't have to worry about them throwing onion rings. But you never know. Some of those old people are real feisty.
That's not what I was thinking, Connie said. I was thinking you're going to give them all a heart attack if you wear that getup.
Lula looked down at herself.
You think it's too much?
I think it's not enough, Connie said.
What's Sally wearing? I asked Lula.
I got him a matching thong.
Lula glanced down at her watch.
I gotta go. We got a rehearsal this afternoon, and then we're playing at 6 o'clock, on account of the old folks don't stay up real late.
Life just gets weirder and weirder, Connie said, taking in the full rear view of Lula running off to the bathroom to change.
I grabbed my shoulder bag and headed for the door. See you Monday.
Don't be late, Connie said. We have the last group of mutants to interview Monday morning.
Goody, goody.
Morelli was still standing across the street, hands on hips, keeping watch over the crime scene. The medical examiner had arrived, along with the meat wagon. A tech truck was angled into the curb, the back doors open. A squad car was double parked, strobe flashing. A uniform was keeping traffic moving. I didn't often see Morelli at work, and I was struck by a few things that I already knew but didn't always think about. He was movie star handsome in a rugged, lean, and muscled way. He was good at his job. He carried more responsibility than I could manage. And his job was really crappy. Every day he slogged through death and misery, seeing the worst side of society. I suppose once in a while good people walked through his life, but I didn't think it was the norm. I slid behind the wheel of the Mini and motored off. In a few minutes, I was back at my apartment. I went straight to my computer and brought my email up. 5 more ads for penis enhancement, 3 ads for big-busted women, 2 ads for cheap mortgage money, and an answer from Nash in Virginia. The email from Nash read, "Know the guy you're looking for, one of those idiots dressing in black tearing posters off the post office wall. Had a one-room office in a strip mall, but it's closed up. I checked for you. Don't know any more than that. Met him once while I was on a stakeout and he wandered onto my turf. I told him he was poaching and he left." So I was more and more convinced there was a guy out there pretending to be Ranger. What I didn't have was a name for the guy, or a face. He obviously resembled Ranger in build and coloring and had to be close in age. He was able to get a fake ID. Not a hard thing to do. Every 16-year-old kid has a fake ID. Ranger was probably riding the wind looking for the guy. And any well-adjusted person would walk away and let Ranger do his thing. Unfortunately, I wasn't that well-adjusted. I possess an abnormal amount of curiosity, undoubtedly a Grandma Mazur gene, and dwarfing the curiosity was concern. I was worried, really worried. Not to mention, I had all these hormonal Ranger feelings that I hadn't a clue how to control. I'd exhausted all my search possibilities, but I knew where there was more information. Ranger's computer. I'd worked for Ranger for a brief amount of time, running searches in the range man office. I knew the programs available, and I knew how they worked. Connie had good programs, but Ranger had better. And I suspected Ranger had a way of recognizing his own name. I had a key to Ranger's apartment, but I couldn't get into it without Tank knowing. Ranger resided on the 7th floor of his office building. The building was secure from the sidewalk in front to the rooftop. Every inch, with the exception of the interior of the apartments, was monitored. I could go to Tank and tell him I was using Ranger's apartment, but the thought practically made me break out in hives. Tank was intimidating. I had no real relationship with Tank, and I was pretty sure he thought I was a pain in the ass. Well, what the hell? Half the people in New Jersey probably thought I was a pain in the ass. A girl can't let something like that stand in her way, can she? Besides, this was all Ranger's fault for not returning my calls. I made myself a peanut butter and olive sandwich, washed it down with a diet soda, beefed up my courage by adding another layer of mascara to my lashes, and set out for Rangeman headquarters. Ranger's building was on a quiet side street in City Center. It was an unremarkable building, neatly maintained, only identified by a small plaque by the front door and the security cameras at the entrance to the underground garage. I pulled the Mini up to the garage entrance and flashed my key pass. The gate opened, and I whipped the Mini into one of Ranger's 4 parking places. Ranger drove a Porsche Turbo, a Porsche Cayenne, and a big-ass truck. All three were parked. I waved at the security camera facing me and stepped into the elevator. I used my key to get to the 7th floor and stepped out into the small foyer. I dialed Tank on my cell phone.
Tank here.
Are you in the control center? I asked him.
Yeah.
Then you know I'm upstairs in the foyer. I thought I'd call and make sure Ranger wasn't inside and naked.
Silence. Tank didn't know what to say to this.
I'm taking your silence as an affirmative that it's okay to go in, I said to Tank.
Let me know if you need anything, Tank said.
I unlocked Ranger's lair, opened the door, and stepped over the threshold. I closed and locked the door behind me and took a moment to let the cool calm wash over me. Ranger's apartment was tastefully decorated by a professional and perfectly kept by a housekeeper. It was masculine and sophisticated and slightly zen. Everything had a place, and I'd spent some time as Ranger's guest, so I knew the routine. Keys went in a dish on the sideboard in the front entrance hall. Also on the sideboard were fresh flowers in a small glass vase. Probably the flowers were never once noticed by Ranger. Mail was stacked in a silver tray. I leafed through the mail, checking the postmarks. It looked like Ranger hadn't been in his apartment since I saw him in the bakery. I called, "Hello?" just in case. No one answered. I walked past the kitchen, dining area, and small living room, and went to Ranger's office just off the bedroom. I sat at his desk and turned his computer on. This felt invasive, but I didn't know what else to do. I couldn't just sit on my hands while Ranger was suspected of kidnapping and possibly murder. I stood and stretched and looked at my watch. It was almost 7 o'clock, and I still hadn't found what I was looking for. I couldn't track the un-Ranger because I couldn't decode Ranger's name, and Carmen and Range Minoso always came to a dead end. I went to the kitchen and looked through the cupboards and fridge. Not a lot I was interested in. Ranger didn't exactly keep a ton of food on hand. There'd be sandwiches downstairs in the control center kitchen, but I didn't want to go there. I finally settled on a beer and some cheese and crackers. I went back to the computer and looked around Ranger's office. No photographs. No personal doodads, only articles selected by the housekeeper or the decorator. This was a place where Ranger slept and worked. This was the Bat Cave. This wasn't his home. I knew Ranger had other properties, and one of those properties was home. I hadn't a clue where it was located or what it looked like. I slouched back in the leather desk chair and closed my eyes. Let's go at this from a different direction, I thought. Straight computer searches weren't working. Pretend Ranger's an FTA. What do I know? He was going to Miami. Why? Not on normal BEA business, he would have told me, and Tank wouldn't be this uncommunicative. Ranger had said it was bad business. So just to choose a direction, let's assume the un-Ranger popped up on the radar screen. Ranger would have shut him down, professionally and personally, possibly permanently. Since it doesn't look like that happened, the next assumption would be that the un-Ranger moved on before Ranger got to him in Virginia. And maybe he moved to Miami. And that would be his undoing, because there was a range man office in Miami. And Ranger's computer guru was at that office. His name was Silvio, and I was betting he knew how to decode Ranger's name. So let's assume the un-Ranger tried to set up shop in Miami, and Silvio found out. And Ranger took off for Miami to take care of the un-Ranger. But before Ranger got to the un-Ranger, the little girl was kidnapped, and now Ranger was looking for both of them. Lots of assumptions, still no facts, still no name, no un-Ranger face. I went into Ranger's mail program. The inbox was empty. Sent items was empty. Nothing in deleted items. Ranger kept things clean. I went to his hard drive and started opening files. This took some time because Ranger numbered his files but didn't name them. File XB112 contained two JPEGs. I opened the JPEGs, and there was the un-Ranger. Both photos had clearly been taken without the man's knowledge. He was walking toward a car. The shots were full frontal and head turned slightly. The man was dressed in black. He was a little less muscular than Ranger, maybe a little wider in the hip. His hair was colored and styled like Ranger's. Sideburns cut at an angle. His skin tone was close, maybe a half shade lighter than Ranger. Facial features were startlingly similar. It was easy to see how a description of this man would fit Ranger. The foliage in the background was tropical. Florida plates on the cars in the photo. I printed both JPEGs and then emailed the JPEGs to myself. Then I permanently erased the email from sent items. My cell phone rang and was so startling in the silent apartment, it had me out of my seat.
"I'm still at work," Morelli said. "This is going to be a late night."
"That's okay," I said. "I'm at work too. Maybe I'll see you tomorrow." I didn't have a name, but I had a picture. And I knew Ranger was on top of it all. I shut his computer down, shut the lights off, and locked up behind myself. I rode the elevator to the garage, waved goodbye at the security camera, and drove away. I stopped at Pino's on the way home and picked up a pizza and a six-pack. Then I rode past the bonds office out of morbid curiosity. Not much to see, thank heaven. The car had been removed. I carted the pizza and beer upstairs, opened my door, and realized the lights were on in my apartment. I experienced a nanosecond of terror until I saw Ranger sitting in my living room.
"Jeez," I said. "You scared the crap out of me. I thought you were in Florida."
Ranger unfolded himself and closed the space between us.
"I just got back."
He took the pizza box and the beer and carried them to the kitchen. We each took a beer and a slice of pizza and ate standing at the counter.
"Did you water my plants?" Ranger wanted to know.
"Ella waters your plants." He went to my shoulder bag, rummaged around in it, and pulled out the two pieces of paper with the un-Ranger pictures.
"I'm impressed. Where did you find them?" he asked.
"In a file on your hard drive. I couldn't get anything else because I couldn't decode your name. If I'd been really desperate, I would have called Silvio."
"Tank wasn't helpful?"
"Tank's entire vocabulary consists of 7 words, 10 tops. You could have returned a phone call and saved me a lot of trouble," I said.
"People can listen in on phone calls."
Ranger took an unheard-of third piece of pizza.
"Wow," I said. "You must be hungry."
His eyes were dark when he looked at me.
"Babe, you don't want to go there."
My heart skipped a beat.
"Probably not," I said.
I picked the un-Ranger picture off the counter. "Do you know who this is?"
"No name, just this photo. It was taken 2 days before the kidnapping. We thought it was simple identity theft and didn't have him under 24-hour surveillance. Big mistake, because he checked out of his motel in the middle of the night, and the next day he kidnapped Julie. We've been 2 steps behind him ever since."
"Everyone thinks you kidnapped Julie."
"Not everyone. Rachel and Ron know I didn't take her. I have a good relationship with them, and the lead agency man knows. We made a decision to go this route and hope the kidnapper feels comfortable enough to get sloppy. The downside is my picture's been all over the media, and now my movement is limited, so I could use some help."
"Why don't you just go blonde?"
"I've been blonde. When I go blonde, I look like I should be singing with the village people."
I burst out laughing. The visual was so perfect.
"You have a sense of humor," I said to him. "Who would have thought?"
"There are lots of things you don't know about me."
"Just about everything."
I gave Rex a piece of pizza crust. "Your cars were all parked at Range Man."
"I can't drive them. Every poser cowboy bounty hunter in the country is looking for me, along with a lot of law enforcement. I've got a green Explorer parked on the street."
"And a new wardrobe."
Ranger was total Abercrombie in jeans, olive drab t-shirt, and a loose-fitting button-down shirt worn untucked.
"You aren't going to give me grief over this, are you?" he asked.
I smiled at him.
"You look cute."
"Cute?" Ranger repeated. "That just dropped my testosterone level."
The Pleasure Treasures bag was sitting forgotten on my counter.
"Looks like I'm not the only one who's been shopping," Ranger said, reaching for the bag.
"No! Don't touch that!"
Too late. He had it in his hands.
"This is embarrassing," I said. "Give me the bag."
Ranger held the bag out of my reach.
"Want to wrestle me for it?"
At another time, this exchange might have felt flirty. Tonight, there was an edge to Ranger, anger simmering just below the surface, and I thought it wouldn't take too much provocation for him to rearrange someone's face. Not mine, of course. He liked my face. Still, he was a little scary. I narrowed my eyes at him.
"Just give me the damn bag."
"I let you snoop on my computer," Ranger said. "The least you can do is let me see in this bag."
"I don't think so."
"Not much you can do about it, babe."
"I'll be mad at you."
"You can't be mad at me," Ranger said. "I'm cute. I might even be adorable.
Try jerk on for size.
Sticks and stones.
He looked in the bag and gave a single soft bark of laughter.
Nice,
he said, taking the dildo out, setting it on the counter, balls down, shaft up, like a giant pink rubber mushroom. I'm not one of those women who blushes easily, but I could feel my ears burning.
Having problems with Morelli?
Ranger asked, the edge gone, anger replaced by something much softer. Amusement, exhaustion, affection. The woman working in the Pleasure Treasure store went FTA, and Lula and I went in to make an apprehension, and Lula got this dancing dildo, but they were having a two-for-one sale, and somehow I ended up with this. It's the Herbert Horsecock model.
It's impressive.
It's frightening, I told him.
He took the DVD out of the bag.
Big boys, he said. I'm seeing a theme here.
Lula said it would change my life.
Ranger put the dildo and the DVD back in the bag.
Does your life need changing?
I don't know. I thought so a while ago, but it feels comfortable now. Except for a commitment dilemma.
He pulled me to him and kissed me in a way that more than made up for the benign kiss in the bakery.
Let me know when you figure it out, he said.
I realized that sometime during the kiss, I'd inserted my leg between his and had plastered myself to him in all the strategic places. I inched away and smoothed out the wrinkles I'd made when I gripped his shirt. Is there something I should be doing tonight to find Julie? I asked him.
Not tonight, but I have some legwork for you to do tomorrow if you have time.
Of course I have time. Are you managing this okay?
It's not the first time I've had to find someone important to me. You learn to keep moving forward, and you go deep into denial.
Are you scared?
Yeah, Ranger said. I'm scared for Julie.
Do you have a place to stay?
I have a safe house in North Trenton. I'll pick you up tomorrow morning at 8.
He reached out to kiss me again, but I jumped away. Another kiss like the last one, and he wouldn't leave. I'd make sure of it.
Still think I'm cute?
Ranger asked, with the almost non-existent smile curving the corners of his mouth. And he left. Chapter 8. I opened an eye and squinted at my bedside clock. 6:30. In the morning. My alarm wasn't set to go off for another hour, but something had dragged me awake. I opened the other eye and did some deep breathing, sucking in the smell of coffee brewing. I rolled out of bed and shuffled into the dining room. Ranger was at the table using my laptop.
Ugh, I said. Coffee's in the kitchen.
What are you doing here?
No computer in the safe house, and I thought this was easier than getting Tank to try to get a laptop to me. I had some things I wanted to run down.
I don't have very good programs.
I don't need programs. Silvio is sending me information from Miami.
How long have you been here?
About an hour.
He stood and stretched and headed for the kitchen. He got two mugs out of the cabinet, filled them with coffee, added milk, and gave one to me. I was wearing short cotton pajama bottoms and a knit tank top, and I could see Ranger was enjoying the tank top.
I'm feeling self-conscious, I said to him.
That's not what I'm feeling.
No kidding.
Go back to work, I told him. I'm going to take my coffee into the shower. I'll be ready to go in a half hour.
Ranger had parked on a side street a block away from my building. He left through the front door and walked to his car. I left through the back door, got into the Mini, and drove around three blocks until I was sure I wasn't being followed. I parked behind Ranger, beeped the Mini locked, and slipped into the green Explorer.
Now what? I asked.
Ranger pulled into traffic and went north on Hamilton.
I want you to canvass a neighborhood for me.
Ranger isn't an especially talkative guy. He doesn't do small talk, and he doesn't usually initiate conversation, but he'll talk about the job if he feels there's a genuine interest. In this case, I definitely had interest. I'd really like to know the history on this, I said to him. I've only got bits and pieces.
2 weeks ago, someone started using a credit card issued to Range Manoso Enterprises with my name on it. Silvio found it during a routine scan. Silvio traced down Range Manoso, and to the best of our knowledge, this guy appeared in Arlington 6 months ago and set up shop. I was about to go to Arlington and shut him down when we discovered he'd moved on. And then all of a sudden he started using the card in Miami. We assumed he was there reestablishing himself. But in retrospect, I think he was there to get Julie.
So you went to Miami to find this guy, and before you got to him, he took Julie?
Yes. And until you called Tank and told him someone smoked Carmen, we had no reason to think he was in Jersey. We thought either he hunkered down somewhere in Florida, or else he was in a car moving around. We didn't think he'd be able to get Julie through security and onto a plane. And the FBI was combing passenger lists for Julie Martin and Carlos Manoso and not finding anything.
If he stole your identity, I guess he could steal others.
Two others turned up when Silvio ran through the Range Manoso credit history. He paid some early bills with cards issued to Steve Scullin and Dale Small. Silvio had been watching passenger lists for both those identities, but nothing there either.
No leads in Miami from the crime scene?
Miami went cold. Julie got picked up in a stolen car. It was found abandoned 2 blocks from the pickup point. The police issued a bulletin, and they're doing the follow-up on calls coming in.
It was my impression that not many people knew you had a daughter.
Zhu and Tank and relatives.
And Julie's mother and stepfather.
Rachel and Ron are working with the people in Miami, trying to trace down anyone who might have known about me. They didn't hide the fact that Ron was Julie's stepfather, but they didn't tell a lot of people the details. Julie knew. My name is on her birth certificate, but Ron adopted her and she's always thought of herself as Julie Martin.
Is that painful?
It might be painful if she wasn't happy, but Rachel and Ron are good parents. Rachel is a nice Catholic girl I took advantage of one night on leave when I was in the military. She got pregnant, and I married her and gave the baby my name and financial support. We divorced after the baby was born. I'm involved only as much as Rachel wants me to be.
She didn't want you to stick around and be a permanent husband?
That was never an option either of us would have considered.
We were on Route 1 driving north. It was early Sunday morning and traffic was light. I was in my usual uniform of jeans and t-shirt. Ranger was in homeboy clothes. From the way you're dressed, I'd guess we were canvassing the ghetto today, I said to Ranger.
You'd guess right.
His jeans were loose fit, but not falling off his ass. Think you can pull it off in those jeans?
They'll have to do. You can't chase someone down if your pants are around your ankles.
True enough, I'd actually chased guys who'd literally run out of their pants.
And I'm a little old for the homie look. I was shooting for Latino Gap, Ranger said. I don't plan to get out of the car, but just in case, I wanted to blend.
Ranger took the turnpike and got off at the Newark exit. When they nicknamed New Jersey the Garden State, they weren't talking about Newark. The neighborhoods we drove through were bleak by anyone's standards. If I'd been with anyone other than Ranger, I'd have turned tail and gotten back on the turnpike. This is a scary neighborhood, I said, taking in the graffiti, the occasional condemned building, the sullen faces of the kids hanging on street corners.
I grew up here, Ranger said. It hasn't changed much in 20 years.
Were you one of those guys on the corner? Ranger cut his eyes to a group of teens.
Eventually. When I was a kid, I was little and I didn't fit, so I got beat up a lot. My skin color was too light for the blacks and too dark for the Cubans, and I had straight brown hair that made me look like a girl.
How awful. Ranger shrugged.
I found out I could survive a beating, and I learned to be quick and to watch my back and to fight dirty.
All good skills, I said,
for street thugs and bounty hunters.
I thought you lived in Miami for a while.
When I was 14, I got arrested for stealing a car and spent some time in juvie. When I got out, my parents sent me to Miami to live with my grandmother. I went to high school in Miami. I moved back to Jersey to take a shot at college, and then I came back when I got out of the army.
Ranger found a place at the curb in front of a deli.
My parents live on the next block, Ranger said. This neighborhood we're in right now really isn't so bad. It's actually the Cuban equivalent to the burg. Problem is, you have to go through the bad neighborhood to get anywhere, including the school.
Ranger clipped a little gizmo onto my jeans waistband.
Panic button. If you have a problem, just push it, and I'll come to you. I want you to take the photo you got off my computer and see if someone knows this guy. He has to have some association with me.
All the signs are in Spanish. Will I be able to talk to anyone?
Everyone speaks English, except for my grandma Rosa, and we're going to try hard not to run into her.
I left Ranger sitting in the SUV and took the picture into the deli. It was a little mom-and-pop business. A butcher in the back behind a glass case filled with sausages and pork roasts and chicken parts. Shelves filled with sacks of rice, spices, cereals, canned goods. Baskets of vegetables. More shelves with breads and packaged cakes and cookies. A middle-aged woman was at the register. I waited for her to check out a customer before introducing myself. I'm looking for this man, I said, showing her the photo. Do you know him?
Yes, I know him,
the woman behind the counter said.
This is Carlos Manoso.
No, I said to her. I know Carlos, and this isn't him. I showed the picture to the butcher and to a woman waiting to have a pork roast boned and rolled. They both thought it was Carlos Manoso, the man the police were looking for. They said they'd seen his photo on television. It was close to noon when I returned to the Green Explorer. My nose was sunburned, and I had sweat running in a river down my breastbone. Nothing, I said to Ranger. Everyone thinks it's you. Ranger looked at the picture. I need to get back to the gym.
It's not the body, it's the clothes and the face. He spent some time studying you. He's got the clothes down, and he's had his hair cut like yours. Hard to tell from this picture if the skin tone is the same or if he's tanned himself to mimic your coloring.
This is the third day, and I still haven't got anything, Ranger said. We worked Miami really hard, mostly talking to relatives and neighbors, going with the idea that he knew me, that he was close enough to someone in my circle to know about Julie.
Is this the first you've started looking in Jersey?
We went to relatives and friends right away. This is the first neighborhood search, and this is the only neighborhood where you pick up information on Julie. It would have to come from one of my relatives. No one in Trenton knew.
Okay, so we seem to be at a dead end on the Ranger connection. Let's go in another direction. He married Carmen Cruz from Springfield, Virginia, and he set up an office in Arlington. Maybe that's where he originates. Not in Arlington, but close enough to feel comfortable with the area. Maybe we should talk to Carmen's parents.
Ranger put the SUV in gear and called Tank. Run Carmen Cruz in Springfield, Virginia, and get Stephanie and me on a train out of Newark going to Northern Virginia. I'll be traveling as Mark Pardo.
Stolen identity? I asked him.
No, it's all mine.
Wouldn't it be faster to fly?
I can't take a gun on a plane.
Ranger left the green SUV in the train station parking lot.
Good luck with that one. One of his guys was supposed to pick it up, but I was giving it a half hour tops before it was on the way to a chop shop.
I was sitting next to Ranger. I had a box of food in front of me from the cafe car, and the rocking of the train was hypnotic and soothing and exciting all at the same time. We were rolling through the country's backyards, seeing America with its pants down.
Ranger was on the phone with Tank, taking down information on Carmen Cruz and arranging for a rental car.
About the cell phone, I said when Ranger disconnected. Why is it okay to talk to Tank when you couldn't call me?
Tank has a secure phone.
Like it's scrambled?
No. They're just phones under different names. It's a way to make sure no one's listening. If someone's trying to get a line on me, they're not going to tap Larry Baker's phone.
Spending time with you is always a learning experience.
There are other things I could teach you, Ranger said.
It was 4 o'clock by the time we picked up the rental car and rolled out of Union Station. Ranger had the GPS gadget set to take us to the Cruz house in Springfield, and it was talking us through downtown Washington. Turn left in 20 feet, the mechanical voice told us. Move to the left lane. Take a right at the bottom of the off-ramp. Merge into traffic.
This thing's giving me an eye twitch, Ranger said. Can you get the sound off?
I started pressing buttons, and the screen went blank. How's that? I asked.
Babe, you shut the system down.
Yes, but the sound is off.
Reprogram it.
No need to get testy, I told him.
I don't know where I'm going.
I have a map. You just get on I-95 South and take the Springfield exit.
And then what?
Then you'll have to pull over and reprogram the GPS.
Ranger looked at me, and there was the tiniest of smiles on his mouth.
I was amusing him. You're a very strange man, I told him.
Yeah, he said. That's what I hear.
I had my cell phone clipped to my waist, and I could feel it buzzing. I looked at the screen. Morelli. Howdy, I said to Morelli.
Can I buy you dinner and a movie and a room at Hotel Morelli?
Sounds good, but I'm working.
After work.
After work, we'll be late, I said.
How late?
Monday or Tuesday.
Where are you?
Morelli wanted to know. I can't tell you that, I said.
God damn it, you're with Ranger, aren't you? I should have known. He's up to his armpits in murder and kidnapping, and he's going to drag you into it with him.
Ranger reached over, grabbed my phone, and shut it down. Hey, I said, that was Morelli.
If you stay on too long, it can be traced down. I'm sure he understands.
Yeah, he understands. If he knew where we were, you'd be seeing his Kojak light in your rearview mirror.
Then I'm glad he doesn't know where we are, because I wouldn't want to have to square off with Morelli. It wouldn't end well for either of us.
We moved onto I-95 South, and I tightened my seatbelt. Driving out of D.C. into Northern Virginia is like NASCAR on a flat, straight track, racing bumper to bumper, 6 wide, 20 miles deep. And attached to that is another identical race going 6 wide in the opposite direction. 2-story high sound barriers rise out of the breakdown lanes and form a cement canyon filled with wall-to-wall noise and insanity. We hurtled forward to the appropriate exit, catapulted ourselves down the chute, and peeled off toward Springfield. Ranger pulled onto the shoulder and reprogrammed the GPS system.
Lucky for you, you look good in a t-shirt, Ranger said.
Lucky for you, I don't have a gun on me.
Ranger turned to me. His voice was low and even, but there was a whisper of incredulous disbelief.
You're not carrying a gun.
Didn't seem necessary for us both to have one.
Chapter 9. It was a little after 5 o'clock when we drove past the Cruz house. We were in a development of middle-income homes, mostly little ranches sitting on small plots of land. Every third house was the same. From the maturity of the trees and shrubs, I'd have guessed the houses were maybe 10 years old. The Cruz house was pale yellow with white trim and a teal-green front door. The landscaping was economy grade but neat. There were several cars in the driveway and 2 at the curb. I imagined friends and relatives were sharing the Cruz's grief over their daughter. Ranger drove 2 blocks over and parked. We were in front of a small public access to a bike path that wound through a narrow greenbelt behind the houses.
I'm going to wait here, he said. You take the car and go do your thing.
Are you sure you want to give me the car after making sexist remarks about my mechanical skills? I might not come back for you.
I'd find you, Ranger said.
He took my hand, kissed the palm, and got out of the car. I exchanged seats, put the car in gear, and drove back to the Cruises. I parked at the curb and blew out a sigh. I was going to feel like a real shit for intruding at a time like this. I set off for the house, and just as I got to the porch, 2 young women came out to have a cigarette. They lit up, took a deep drag, and sat down on the step to enjoy the rest in comfort. I extended my hand. Stephanie Plum, I said. Were you friends with Carmen? They both nodded.
I'm Sasha, one said. Lorraine.
I'm part of the task force investigating the crime, I told them. Would you mind if I ask some questions? Lorraine looked down at my jeans. You're going to have to excuse my dress, I said. I was called in on my day off, and I didn't get a chance to change.
What do you want to know?
Do you know her husband?
Carmen talked about him in the beginning. Ranger, Ranger, Ranger. I mean, how lame is that? Who calls himself Ranger?
Did she ever mention his real name?
Carlos.
Would you recognize him if you saw a picture?
No, none of us actually saw him. And then all of a sudden she was married and living in Arlington, and she sort of fell off the earth.
Is he from this area?
I don't know where he's originally from,
Lorraine said.
He was working as a security guard at Potomac Mills Mall when she met him. He told her it was only a temporary job until his business took off.
What business was that?
He was a bounty hunter. Carmen thought that was real cool. From what I hear, she cashed in an insurance policy so they could buy computers and shit.
A tear ran down Lorraine's cheek, and she wiped her nose with the back of her hand.
The people on television are saying the bastard shot her.
Thanks, I said. This has been helpful. I got directions to the mall, drove back to the bike path, and picked Ranger up. When Carmen met this guy, he was working as a security guard at Potomac Mills. It's a mall off I-95 a couple miles south of here, I told Ranger. Ranger punched Potomac Mills into the GPS.
Okay, sweetheart, he said to the GPS. Talk to me.
If you entered Potomac Mills at one end and stared down the length of the mall, you would be sure it ended in Kansas. We were standing in front of a mall map, getting the lay of the land, looking for the security office, and not finding it.
The mall closes at 7, Ranger said. We've got a little over an hour to get someone to ID our man. I'm going to have Tank see if he can do something by phone. Meanwhile, you try to find security people to talk to. I'll be 50 paces behind you.
I looked down the mall and saw 2 uniformed guards standing back on their heels watching the shoppers. Man and woman, in their 20s. The woman looked like she'd gained some weight since they'd issued her uniform. Her partner was tall and gangly, bad complexion. I was guessing they ate a lot of meals at the food court. I came up to them with a smile, friendly, needing assistance.
Excuse me, I said.
I'm looking for a guy who used to work as a security guard here. I can't remember his name, but he was medium build, dark brown hair, kind of nice looking. Caucasian, I think, but with dark skin. Probably hasn't been here for maybe 6 months.
Doesn't ring a bell,
the woman said.
Did he work weekends? We only work weekends.
I'm not sure.
You should talk to Dan, she said. He's been here forever. He knows everyone. He's sort of heavy set and balding, and he's probably down toward the other end. He might be around Linens and Things unless he got a call.
I wasn't sure where Linens and Things was located, but with the way this mall was looking, it could be a couple miles. I took off at a fast walk, trying not to be distracted by the stores. I made it past Banana Republic and the Gap, but instinctively stopped in front of Victoria's Secret. I felt Ranger at my back, his hand warm on my waist.
If you buy something, you have to model it, he said.
I got a rush at the thought. Panic followed, and then guilt.
Just looking, I said.
I hate to ruin this moment, but there's a guard at 3 o'clock.
Is he overweight and balding?
Hard to tell if he's balding from here, but he's overweight. He's standing by the kiosk 4 or 5 stores down.
I see him.
I read his name tag as I approached him. Dan Witten.
Excuse me, I said. I'm looking for a guy who used to be security guard here. I can't remember his name. Medium build, Caucasian, but sort of dark skin, dark brown hair.
That's a pretty broad description. What do you want with him?
I met him in a bar a couple days ago, and he walked away with my iPod. We were comparing MP3 players, and he got a phone call and had to leave. I didn't realize until too late that he'd walked off with my iPod and left me with his piece of junk. Anyway, all I remembered was that he said he used to work here, and he said now he was working as a bounty hunter.
Edward Scrogg, you should kiss that iPod goodbye. The guy's a nutcase. He got fired for harassment.
You mean sexual harassment?
All kinds of harassment. Some guys go power goofy when they get a badge and a uniform. This guy thinks he's Wyatt Earp or something. Walked around with his hand on his flashlight like it was a gun.
He broke into a smile.
Scrogg used to pat women down. He'd claim they looked suspicious. That was ultimately his undoing. Tried to do a pat-down on a Fed. She pulled a move on him and had him on the floor with her foot on his neck. Then she filed charges.
I don't suppose you know where I can find him.
No, it wasn't like we were friends.
Well, thanks, I said. This has been helpful.
Let me give you some advice you didn't ask for. Stay away from Scrogg. He's got a screw loose. When they fired him, they walked him to his locker, made him clean it out and leave the premises. I was there to make sure he left, and I saw what was in the locker. He had it filled with guns and ammo, and he had pictures pasted on the door like a kid does with baseball stars and then later on with girls with big hooters. Only this guy had pictures of SWAT guys taking people down. It's like he's seen too many cop movies. When he first came on the job, he was applying to all the local police academies, only no one would give him a call back. After he was here a couple months, he started talking about the bounty hunter thing. Watched all the shows on television. Apparently he was hooked on some bounty hunter in Jersey who was supposed to be a real hotshot. And he said he was studying him. Used to take off weekends so he could observe this guy. So maybe he's in Jersey now. Good for Virginia, that's my opinion. You look like a nice girl, he said. Take my advice and buy yourself a new iPod.
I walked back to Ranger and gave him the whole story. I imagine the hotshot Jersey bounty hunter would be you, I said to Ranger. Ranger called Tank and gave him the name.
Run an address history for me, Ranger said. I want to know what's open.
We found the food court and sat at a table while we ate pizza and waited for Tank to call back. The call came in at 7:05. Ranger took 2 addresses down and disconnected.
We have Scrogg's parents' house in Fairfax and an apartment in Dale City.
Did you ever search his office or the apartment he shared with Carmen?
We went through the office in Arlington on the first pass. He didn't leave anything. Same with the apartment. He didn't leave on an impulse. He'd removed everything that could identify him. There were some clothes hanging in the closet and some things in the dresser. Everything else belonged to Carmen.
Scrogg's Dale City apartment building was a 2-story cinder block bunker with a parking lot and a close-up view of the interstate. Scrogg was on the 2nd floor. Unit 209. 10 units to a floor. Stained carpet. Strong burrito aroma coming out of 206. Ranger knocked on the door of 209. No answer. He tried the knob. Locked.
I don't suppose you have anything helpful in your bag, he asked me.
Like a set of burglary tools? No.
Ranger put his foot to the door, kicked it open, and stepped inside. I followed behind him and tried to get the door to stay closed.
Don't worry about it, Ranger said, flipping the light on. We won't be in here long. There's not a lot to see.
It was a one-bath studio apartment with a small kitchenette along one wall. The blinds were drawn on the single window. There was a sofa bed open and unmade, a small table with two wooden ladder-backed chairs, a two-drawer metal file cabinet, and two laundry baskets holding a computer and accessories.
This guy travels light, Ranger said.
Maybe he has stuff stored with his parents. Ranger opened a closet and a bunch of guns fell out. He stepped over the guns and squatted in front of the file cabinet and opened the top drawer.
He has a file labeled Captures, but it's empty. He also has a file labeled Wanted, and it's filled with pictures he ripped off federal bulletin boards.
Ranger pulled the bottom drawer open, removed a scrapbook, and handed it over to me.
I have a bad feeling about this scrapbook. Scan it while I look through the cupboards.
Your bad feeling is justified, I said, flipping pages. This is homage to Ranger. It looks to me like he was following you around. There are pictures in here of your office building and your cars. There are pictures of you. Pictures of you with me. Pictures of... Oh, my God. It was a picture of Carmen, naked. The handwriting on the bottom read, Our Wedding Night, Practicing for the Real Thing. And it was followed by a snapshot of me. And for the first time, I saw the resemblance between Carmen and me. Not that we'd pass for twins, more that we were similar in coloring and build. Ranger looked over my shoulder.
This guy is sick.
Do you think he married Carmen because she looks a little like me?
Yes. I think he's trying to move into my life.
He left her behind and killed her.
Guess he's done practicing, Ranger said.
The next page had a picture of Ranger in front of the Martins house, talking to Ron. The caption read, Ranger makes a mysterious visit, and I know his secret. This was followed by pictures of Julie. Ranger went dead still. He stared at the pictures of his daughter, and his face showed no emotion, but he wasn't breathing. It was as if the oxygen had been sucked out of the room. His hands were loose at his sides, and his eyes were focused on the pictures. He was looking at a little girl with silky brown hair, intelligent brown eyes, and flawless light brown skin, the image of her father. I slipped my hand in his and waited for him to pull himself together. She'll be okay, I said. He's playing a role. He's going to act like he's her dad.
Ranger nodded. I'd like to think that was true. Let's back up. I'm going to take the computer and the scrapbook. I don't see anything else of value to us.
We carted Scrog's stuff downstairs and out to the car and put it in the trunk. The sun had set, and the parking lot was dark. Traffic noise carried over the apartment building. Now what? I said to Ranger. Do you want to talk to his parents?
No. I have what I need. Let's go home.
We took I-95 north to the Beltway, driving in silence, Ranger in his zone. We were following taillights in the dark, gliding through the night like disembodied spirits. We were between time and place, encapsulated in steel and fiberglass. All this much more poetic than the reality of the moment, which was that my ass was falling asleep. I'd like to say I was in a zone like Ranger, but the truth was, I'd never in my life achieved a zone. In fact, I couldn't even imagine a zone, and didn't really know what one was. If I had to describe my condition, I'd have to say I was freaked. I fell asleep somewhere in Maryland and didn't wake up until we were on Broad Street. I stretched and looked at Ranger. His hand was loose on the wheel. His breathing was even. At first glance, he seemed relaxed. If you looked more closely, the tension around his eyes and the corners of his mouth was visible. I wondered what was really inside him, and at what cost he kept it hidden. He parked in my lot and got out of the car.
I'm going to see you upstairs, he said.
Not necessary. He beeped the car locked and moved me toward the building.
It is necessary. There's some psycho running around wanting to add you to his Ranger memorabilia.
You're right, I said. Thanks. I'm happy to be escorted. We got upstairs without incident. Ranger opened the door to my apartment and flicked the lights on. Rex was quietly running on his wheel.
The attack hamster is on the job, Ranger said.
I dropped a peanut into Rex's cage and turned back to Ranger. He looked tired under the kitchen light. He had dark smudges under his eyes, and his mouth was tight, fighting sleep. You look exhausted, I said to him.
Long day.
You have another half-hour drive to get to your safe house. Would you like to stay here tonight?
Yes.
This isn't a sexual invitation, I said.
I know. The couch will be fine.
Chapter 10. I woke up slowly. I opened my eyes and saw there was a bar of light shining through the crack between my bedroom curtains. It was morning, and I was in my own bed feeling incredibly comfy. I looked down and realized there was a man's arm thrown across my chest, the hand lightly curled around my breast. Ranger. I moved my head ever so slightly on the pillow and looked over at him. He was still asleep. He had a decent beard growth going, and his hair had fallen across his forehead. I was pretty sure he wasn't in my bed when I fell asleep. I looked under the covers. I was wearing my knit tank top and short pajama bottoms. Ranger was wearing briefs. Could be worse, I thought. Hey, I said. He wrapped his arms around me and cuddled me into him, his eyes still closed. Ranger? What are you doing in my bed?
So far I'm not doing anything, but that could change.
You said you were going to sleep on the couch.
I lied.
This was bad because he felt way too good. I looked beyond him to the clock. 9 o'clock. I have to go to work, I said. I'm already late. He drew me in a little closer and stroked his thumb across my breast.
Are you sure you want to go to work now?
I got a rush that was so strong it might have been an orgasm, and I think I might have moaned a little. Mentally, I was working hard to be faithful to Morelli, but the physical part of me wasn't cooperating. Ranger kissed my shoulder, and the phone rang. Ordinarily, at a time like this, you'd rip the phone line out of the wall, but these were scary days, and we both went still at the sound. Let me get it, I said, reaching across Ranger. There was a lot of noise at the other end, and then Melvin's voice came on. Thank God you answered, he yelled into the phone. I'm all alone here, and this mob's getting ugly. And Joyce Barnhart is here, and she's frightening me. Where are Connie and Lula? I don't know where Lula is. Connie had to go bond someone out. I heard a gun go off in the background. Melvin shrieked, and the line went dead. I pushed away from Ranger, and I rolled out of bed. I have to go. Melvin's alone at the bonds office, and he's got problems. I grabbed some clothes and ran into the bathroom.
Who's Melvin? Ranger said to my back.
I slid to a stop in front of the bonds office and jumped out of the mini. The plate glass window was filled with lettering advertising bail bonds. Beyond the lettering, I could see that the small front office was filled with people dressed like television bounty hunters. I pushed through the door and shouted for Melvin. Here, he yelled back. Under the desk! I plowed through the crowd and looked under the desk at Melvin. Why are all these people here? I thought they were scheduled throughout the morning.
Something got messed up and they were all told to come in at 9.
What was the gunshot I heard?
2 guys were playing quick draw and one of them accidentally shot the phone.
I glanced over at the phone. Shot dead. I reached into the petty cash drawer and took out a wad of money. Hey, I said, listen up. No one listened, so I climbed onto the desk and tried again. Hey, I yelled. Everyone shut the fuck up and listen to me. This got their attention. I'm very sorry, but the appointments got screwed up, I told them. I'm going to reschedule you, and I'm going to give everyone $5 to go have breakfast while you wait for your appointment time, so I want everyone to line up single file. Pandemonium. Everyone wanted to be first. Someone got knocked to the ground, and someone got punched in the face, and there was a lot of cussing and shouting and eye gouging and biting. I got Connie's gun out of her desk drawer and fired a round into the ceiling. A chunk of plaster fell onto the desktop, and plaster dust sifted onto my hair and shoulders. If you don't get in line nicely, I'm going to shoot you, I said. This got them to sullenly line up with just a minimum amount of pushing and shoving. I gave out 15-minute appointments to 11 people. They each got $5. All but one left. You can come out from under the desk now, I told Melvin. What happened to Joyce? I thought Joyce was here.
She left. She said she'd be back later this morning. She was real mad. Something about getting sent on a wild goose chase?
I dragged a folding chair over to the desk and told the first bounty hunter impersonator to sit down. The folding chair was old and scarred and said Steva Funeral Home on the back. I sat in Connie's chair and called Lula on my cell.
"Where the heck are you?" I asked Lula. "I had to go shopping. We were a big hit at the old people's home, and we got a new gig out of it, and I need a new outfit."
"You're supposed to be here helping with the interviews."
"I figured you didn't need me. They're all losers anyway."
I looked at the guy in the folding chair. He was dressed in black leather pants and a black leather vest that showed a lot of chest hair. A roll of fat oozed out from under the vest and spilled over his belt buckle. He'd accessorized with black leather wristbands that were studded with the metal things you see on Rottweiler collars. And he was wearing a blonde mullet wig. "You're right," I said to Lula. "Happy shopping." "So," I said to the guy in front of me, "what makes you qualified to be a bond enforcement agent?"
"I watch all the television shows, and I know I could do this. I don't take shit from anyone, and I got a gun."
"That would be the one that's strapped to your leg?"
"Yeah, and I'm not afraid to use it. I don't take crap from blacks, spics, chinks, Polacks, or commies. I swear I'll kill all the motherfuckers if I have to."
"Good to know," I said. "You can go get breakfast now." Connie rolled in while I was interviewing idiot number 5.
"How's it going?" she asked. "Sorry I'm late. I had to bond someone out. Is that a bullet in my phone?"
"We had some problems in the beginning, but it's all straightened out now," I told her. "So far I've seen 2 psychos, 1 gay nut, a guy who got a boner talking about guns, and this gentleman here who seems to be wearing black leather chaps, cowboy boots, and nothing else." Connie looked down at the guy in the chair.
"Nice boots," she said to him.
When he left, we sprayed the chair with Lysol and invited the next candidate to sit.
"I'm here on a mission from God," he said. "I'm here to save your immortal souls."
"I thought you were here for the bond enforcement position," Connie said.
"God loves sinners, and what better place to find them?"
"He's got a point," I said to Connie. Connie ripped his application off her clipboard. Lula bustled in as the last guy was leaving.
"I can't believe how hard it is to find clothes when you're a rock star. It's not like us singers can wear just any old thing. And now Sally and me are getting famous for dressing together, and so I gotta find something that'll match up with a thong for him. I tell you, it's not easy."
"Why can't you wear the white outfit again?" I asked her.
"It turns out all that shiny white isn't good for the old folks. They got macular shit and cataracts, and they were getting seizures from the light reflection off my ass."
Lula pulled a wad of pink feathers out of her shopping bag.
"I finally found this here flamingo feather dress. Only thing is, I couldn't find a flamingo feather thong, so I got a boa, and I figure we can sew some of it on a jock strap or something."
"That's a lot of flamingo feathers," Connie said. "They aren't real, are they?"
"It says here they're genuine farm-raised dyed fowl. You want me to try it on?"
"No,"
Connie and I said in unison. Lula looked a little put off, so I told her it was just that we were starving and maybe she'd show us after lunch.
"I'm hungry too," Lula said. "I'm feeling like spaghetti and meatballs."
"I could go for some spaghetti," Connie said. "I'll get Pino's to deliver."
"I want a meatball sub," I told her.
"And a side of potato salad," Lula said, "and a piece of their chocolate cake. Now that I'm doing all this entertaining, I gotta keep my strength up."
"Melvin," Connie yelled out, "we're ordering from Pino's. Do you want something?"
"No," Melvin said from behind the first bank of file cabinets. "I brought my lunch. I have to save my money in case I go to jail. I hear if you can't afford to buy cigarettes for everyone, you have to be someone's bitch."
"Is that why you didn't show up for your trial?" Lula asked. "On account of you didn't want to be someone's bitch?"
"Yeah, I know I'm a pervert and all, but I'm not that kind of a pervert. I'm sort of a specialist. I'm like a do-it-yourself pervert."
"I hear you," Lula said. "I've shopped in that aisle."
Connie put the order in and shoved a stack of files to the middle of her desk.
"We have to pick one of these."